mentioned it briefly, we've talked about it, is that when, after Solomon's rule, we have the kingdom split again, and we have just a jumbled up mess. Time that I have, so I'm going to try to get to my main point. I am going to read the memory verse here because I think that's important. It's Philippians 3:13-14. But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. And I think through this story is indicative of that. Y'all, sorry, but you get me preaching again today. Kevin's at Blue Haven, so I'm going to preach also. And sometimes, as y'all know, when I do preaching and class, sometimes the things run together. And I think that's a testament to how connected both ends are. But at least in this passage, it's going to go through some kings. And as I said before, you have the split between Israel and Judah. And Judah's kind of set apart. God's promise to David, as long as you walk in my ways, you'll have somebody, one of your descendants, sit on the throne. And he makes that testament to David's line. Eventually it falls off. But in this Judah story, and I apologize if I could read all this, I definitely would. I'd have to go in like 2x speed, my normal reading speed. So not going to happen today, because it covers, 2 Chronicles, 1 Kings, a lot of passages through 1 Kings, about 4 chapters, 5 chapters, and then 2 Kings. So there's no way that I read through 3 books of the Bible. But hopefully y'all have read it before and realize after this kingdom separation, you have in the Judah camp these drastic ups and downs. And I've mentioned it in class before, as you have these statements typically after it mentions a king. And it says he's the son of so-and-so, and he either walked in the ways of God or he walked in the ways of evil. And it separates that very early on. Oftentimes a repeated saying is didn't touch the high places. Let the high places for people to go worship different gods stand. And so you have these, it's almost like a report card through these. You have these statements, who they are, if they walked in the ways of the Lord or if they did not. And this is what they did to get that grade. They either left people on the high places, or they themselves led people down the wrong direction. And so we have that prevalent. I'm going to flip over so y'all can see what I'm talking about, and I'm not paraphrasing too much here. I had it on my phone. I did need my phone. Sorry. I had to lender the phone. I'm way faster on this than I am with there on the Kindle right now. So this is just 1 Kings 22, verse 51. And this is just one of the kings that they're going to they're going to talk about Ahaziah, son of Ahab, became king of Israel and Samaria in the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah. And he reigned over Israel 2 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord because he followed in the ways of his father and mother and of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, who caused Israel to sin. He served and worshipped Baal and aroused the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, just as his father had done. So we see this. In the Israel side of the camp, that's all the kings they have. In the Judah side of the camp, we have this cycle, which some kings are going to walk in the ways of David or of their father in the ways of the Lord, and some people are going to do evil in the sight of the Lord. And then in the Israel camp, we just have this flat line. And what I hope that sparks into our mind and what we should be thinking about is that that's what Christ came here for. If you want to take these parallels from this time, this is indicative of we were talking about this with Israel and with the rest of the world. Israel's following God, and they have their ups and their downs and their ups and their downs, and they see that very prevalently. And then the rest of the world, you just see this wickedness. And now it's even divided amongst Israel, where in Israel's time, the kings of Judah have their ups and their downs and their ups and their downs. And this king was good, and this king did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And then throughout Israel's time, separated from Judah, their kings are doing this flat line. And I think it's even more neat that this is placed into the Bible. The reason being is that I think oftentimes as a people group, what do we look at as Christians? Oh, we're here on Sunday. Oh, we're doing this good. Oh, we're doing that good. And so I think it's incredible that we have these stories where it almost seems like God's people and then the rest of the world. And we're kind of like, oh, I'm glad we're in God's camp. And oftentimes we like to pat ourselves in the back for thinking that we're in this camp. And then the very next sequence of events, we have God's people divided. Some of them at times following the ways of the Lord. Others worshiping Baal and following false gods. Let that resonate. Go ahead. And I think that's even, if you even zoom in the microscope a little bit more, I think we all have those patterns just in our lives. It's not necessarily this person and that person. I think it's indicative of patterns in our own life. Who's been red hot on fire for God? Probably all of us at some point in time. Who's the next month been ice cold and angry and frustrated? Probably all of us at some point in time. I'm not saying that's right. I'm not justifying it and saying, hey, that just happens. You just go up and down, right? We're called to something higher, but I think it's indicative. And I think the Bible, the story of the Bible, does so well at pointing towards Christ. When Christ comes and he's talking to the Samaritan, and he says, hey, there's a time that it's not even going to be in the temple or on the mountain. He's talking about something way bigger, not Jew or Gentile. He's talking about something that's going to bring people together. And I think what I hope we see through all these stories that we read, through all the kings that this little section is going to go over, and the ups and the downs, and this king led people to follow Baal, this king walked in the ways of the Lord, did this, did that, and their whole report card and the ebbs and flows of everything, I hope we see as in this section, one of the coolest things to me is that it's not separating Jew and Gentile. It's saying, hey, this is a struggle amongst God's chosen people. Because how easy is it sometimes to check your box and go, boy, I'm glad I didn't do this. Boy, I'm glad I didn't fall for that. Boy, I'm glad I, boy, I'm glad I, boy, I'm glad I. And God's saying, hey, zoom in a little bit. Because what we like to focus on is what we don't struggle with. Guarantee for everybody in here, there's something that they do really well. There's a sin that just doesn't move the needle for them. But probably in the darker side, in the shadows, there's something that really messes with them. Right? We see it over and over again, and I hope we're starting to see the pattern. The pattern that's way more important for a lot of reasons. And I think another important thing to point out here is all of this happens prior to Christ. So almost everything that we read leading up to Christ, we see the flood story where God wipes out everything and brings it just down to one man or one family, right? And we're like, okay, that's a pretty good start. Noah just witnessed, and his kids just witnessed God flood the earth, take everything away, and save it through one family. Who thought that they would be pretty fired up after they got off that boat? And then the very next story is a fall story, a fall narrative. I mean, we read this, and the stories just go up and down and up and down, and in every way that is written biblical pre-Christ, it doesn't matter how good of an idea you sit back and say, hey, that's a pretty good idea. If we could just restart with one man who is more righteous than anyone in his time, who is righteous in his time, I bet he could have things pretty lined up in the future. Are all these things that people see are being led out of Israel with these plagues and being led out and people witnessing these plagues and God save them and bring them out. And when they start to panic, what does he do? He crosses them across the Red Sea and wipes out the Egyptian army. And you're thinking, hey, we ought to be pretty fired up right there, right? They ought to come out on the other side of this going, I mean, just singing his praises. And what happens? The next story, they start whining again. And then guess what God does? He provides for them. He brings manna down so that they're not starving in the wilderness. And then the next story is what? More whining. And they said, hey, we even got meat. Right? We got meat in Israel. At least we weren't just eating this bread. And what does God do? Provide again. And so out of all these miracles, out of all the people who witnessed all these great things that God did, typically the next story is the fall. Who does that point to? Christ. Every time. Because it doesn't matter how good of a person somebody might be or how much you might appreciate and respect somebody that's going to stand up and lead, or it doesn't matter what's going on all around, the bottom line is us as humans have always fallen short. No matter the opportunities extended to us, no matter the weight of leadership that's put on somebody's shoulders, and it doesn't matter how well they handle it or how poorly they handle it, every time they're falling short. When God separates Judah out, because again, we're going to say this whole thing is done for the glory of God. And us sitting hindsight 2020, we ought to be able to look at this and say, hey, this happened for an intentional purpose. God was using the split, the separation for his glory to show us what we need to see. And I think what we need to see in this passage, in these passages, in the ups and down of Kings, is God took the descendants of David, separated into their own tribe, away from the wickedness of all Israel, and kind of, you know, put a little cushion around them. Yet over and over and over again, they choose the opposite. They choose not to follow God. We talked about the first three kings of Israel. Saul is head and shoulders above everybody else. And so what does he look like? A guy that you want to go to battle with, right? Nobody wants to go to war with my boy. He's 2 years old. He's not going to do anything. Saul's head and shoulders taller than everybody else. He's rugged. He's strong. He's got all the physical aspects that you'd be like, hey, this is a guy who should be a leader. And we watch him have a little up and then a lot of downs. And then David follows right after, and you're thinking, hey, this is the guy. He was patient in his coming up to the kingdom. He was patient in his throne. Even after he gained the throne of Judah, the rest of Israel was still separate. And for 7 more years, he was patient. He let God's time play out. I mean, he's just getting built up. And he's like, hey, this is a man after God's own heart. And we get excited. And he had opportunities to overthrow Saul. And his men were like, hey, you should do this. To everybody around you, this would be justifiable. Saul's pursued your life over and over and over. You have an army behind you. Let's just knock him out and get it over with. What does David do? He waits. Says, who am I to raise my hand against God's anointed? He's patient. And he lets God's time play out. And then it's looking really good, really good. And then what do we see? Not just the story of Bathsheba, but his neglect to his duties prior to Bathsheba. His people are away at war, and what's he doing? Sitting on the couch eating popcorn. Watching the pretty neighbor take a bath on the next roof. Then we have the fall of David. And then we have Solomon, who ushers in this amazing kingdom. And he's wiser than anybody who's lived and anyone who's lived since. And God gave him that. And he used that wisdom to do it. Everything backwards of what God instructed a king to do in Deuteronomy. You have the brawn, the brain, or the brawn, the heart, and the brain. That you can put Saul, David, and Solomon all up on a pedestal and say, hey, they did this, or they were this, or whatever the case may be. God made the first three kings something that people would look to for an earthly king. And every time it blows up. And all the kings after are just the cherry on top. So-and-so leads, so-and-so doesn't. It just repeats over and over, much faster than it does in the first three kings. There's less written about the next ones. It goes over their story fairly quickly. But it says they walked in the way of the Lord, and I think that's important. That in throughout Judah's time, I think it's important. I think it's neat that they did that in such a quick succession. So-and-so walked in the way of the Lord. So-and-so did what was evil in sight of the Lord. So-and-so walked in the way of the Lord. So-and-so did what was evil in sight of the Lord. We see that over and over and over again. Almost as if it's telling us it doesn't matter how right the first person was. After they're gone, when you don't anchor in something deeper than an earthly king, when you're not hooked at the hip to God, but you're hooked at the hip in the desire of an earthly kingdom, the next story is a fall. We get so caught up oftentimes in what's going on around us. And this is where I say the water's going to get muddied a little bit in the sermon today. We get so caught up in things that are happening around us. When Christ comes, it's written that his own people will reject him. And they very much do. I don't think there's a person in here that doubts if Christ came how a lot of people were anticipating. Guns a-blazing, raise an army, overthrow, and establish a kingdom forever. I think everyone would have hopped on board. But he came as something that very few understood. Setting a heavenly kingdom for eternity. And what I love in this, I've said it earlier, is that we have this narrative of originally it's God's people against the rest of the world. And you're like, go God's people. And then he breaks it down to something a little deeper, a little more personal. The separation amongst God's chosen people. All to be brought back together by a Messiah that most people missed. We get caught up in all the stuff happening around us. We get caught up in a want to, I think it's human desire to want to worship something. Some people are going to say, not at all, right? But at the end of the day, they're probably worshiping work, money. Go down the list. And it's oftentimes a whole lot easier to worship what you can hold in your hand. The dollar, the house, the job, the approval of, what's that? Some kind of recreation. We fall into it all the time. And I think it's most of us today look back and say, hey, no, we know who the Messiah is. At least the people sitting in this room. Hey, we know who the Messiah is. It's Christ. But we don't zoom in the microscope to say, hey, are you missing what his intent was? The Sermon on the Mount. Kevin talked about it last week. Where you're storing up your treasures. And it's not to say that you can't have something here. It's not to say, it's to say what you're worshiping. It's to say what you're pursuing, what has control over you. We only have a few minutes left. Questions, comments? over and over and over again. It did. Dad calls me a nerd. I love how the Bible is written. I think if we look at the stories that are put in place and we don't just take a face value, I don't even want to say parable, but you're not just looking for the moral stamp of a story, if that makes any sense. When we read, it should be to read and to see what it tells us about God. And I think very early on, it's prevalent that God wasn't playing hide the peanut with his plans. You look over all these Old Testament stories and you look at the parallels to who's to come, Christ the Messiah and the kingdom he's to establish. It's written all over the place. And I think this is just another evidence of that. Nothing else? All right, we got through it a little bit faster than I thought I would. I think we have 5-ish minutes left. We have some visitors, at least one person that I at least haven't met yet, and his brother-in-law that we have met. How long are y'all going to be here for? Okay. Well, Monty, you'll have to find somebody else to preach. I'm going to be gone next week, too. I am. So you're going to have to, since you're the, what's it called? Why am I spacing on the word? Delegator. I thought I would let you know beforehand.